Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
My name is Angelo Carasone, better known as Stop Back on Twitter, and primarily I spend my time trying to debunk right-wing lies that permeate our media, and there's, you know, one of the places that we do it is on Bob Carson's show.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013. And you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour. And I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book, Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. And you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hi, this is David Levitt, your host from SYM Radio. SYM Radio is helping raise awareness to missing persons, parental stranger abductions, and human trafficking through our partners. We also raise awareness that people with disabilities can do whatever they set their mind to through the love of God and Christ. And we're proud to be an affiliate with Carson's Corner, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Jay Ray and Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio and also at SYMradio.com/live.
I'm Katie Strickland from ABC's Private Practice. In recent months, I've been working with Rain on a storyline involving my character Charlotte King's sexual assault. My work with Rain has been one of the most important things I've ever done. It shed light on the difficulties that many people face every day. Rain provides a critical service to more and more victims each year, but Rain needs our help in order to sustain this critical service. So I'm asking you to join me this holiday season. Give what you can. A little goes a long way.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it too. I encourage you to listen.
You're listening to 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio.
Welcome live to another great edition of Carson's Corner on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Bob Carson, 347-326-9749 if you want to join the discussion this hour. We have a great show for you. A lot of passionate issues are going to be discussed on this show, and I'm going to get a little passionate because that's what we do here on Carson's Corner. We've got the chat room open for you if you want to chime in there. Those that don't want to call in, there are some people out there that are just afraid to go mano a mano with myself. And I understand that. I do. I'd be afraid of me, too, so I'd probably have to go online. No, I'm just kidding. You're welcome. Any way you want to interact with the show, that's fine. You can call me. You can chime in the chat room. That's fine. No shortage of news out there. And that has really been the case over the past week or so. The one-week anniversary of the Boston Marathon bomb and the terrorist attack. And I got to tell you, when this happened, and I'm an information junkie, I just, the TV is so slow, radio is so slow, but I found myself just driving for hours listening to Sirius Satellite Radio because I don't have a television. And I spent hours online just trying to find out the latest updates on what happened and the investigation and so on and so forth. It's already been a week, and what a wild, wild week. I'm not going to rehash what happened. You know what happened. Everybody knows what happened, okay? This is, they said 42 million people were watching the last hour of the manhunt for the younger brother, Sarnoff, probably mispronouncing his name, the 19-year-old, who was a star athlete. You know, I'm not going to give you his biographical information. You know that. There's no need to. I just got to tell you that whenever something like this happens, and I'm speaking as an American citizen, and I'm speaking as someone who, you know, obviously works for a living like all of you do, this was a traumatic event for all of us. My stress level and your stress level and my paranoia and your paranoia, your anxiety, my anxiety have undoubtedly been increased over the past week, because this is America's worst nightmare. And this is really the worst thing that we can imagine. One of the worst things that we can imagine is a bomb going off in a crowded area like this. You know, we saw this in 1996. It's not the first time, but, you know, the carnage, the devastation that took place. How many people's lives were affected? How many people, you know, this is awful, got legs blown off? And I got to tell you, even after this event, I felt just weird sensations in my legs. And that's undoubtedly due to the psychological trauma that I and many of you have experienced because of this. You know, you feel lucky to have your legs and your extremities after seeing the horrible pictures online and just understanding the gravity of this situation, as really none of us will, because I don't know anybody that was affected by this, and I'm sure a lot of people out there don't know. So we can't really truly understand the gravity of this situation, but nothing like this has ever happened in American history, not to this extent. Closing of a city, locking down a city. Somebody posted on Facebook a picture of all the tanks and all the Hummers and going down Cambridge or Watertown, one of these towns, and it looked like something you'd see in North Korea. I mean, this is it's a war zone. It really is. And so, you know, it's still fresh in everybody's mind. And these were just unimaginable events here. But now we're on to some other things. We're on to how we try the remaining suspect, Jokhar Zarnoff, okay? He's a 19-year-old again. He's now in critical condition. And I read a report. He's in stable condition now. He's off and on communicating with authorities. And I read a report that he was actually shot through the mouth and an exit wound exited the back of his head. That seems like a self-inflicted wound to me, just the description on that. But, I mean, how does he get shot in the mouth by a police officer and the bullet exits the back of his head? It's pretty just remarkable. They're saying that he may not speak ever again. And so now this debate has come up about how do we deal with this guy? Do we classify him as an enemy combatant, or do we Mirandize him and put him through the civilian court? There's no longer a debate now, because the Obama administration has said that this is going to be, he's not going to be declared an enemy combatant, and therefore he will stand trial in a federal civilian court based on the crimes that were committed here, okay, based on the severity of the crimes and the type of crimes. On a federal level, he is going to be eligible for the death penalty, and the federal prosecutors will have to decide whether or not they're going to seek the death penalty on this kid. And this was something that I've wished for all along, because listen, the United States government does a lot of things right and does a lot of things wrong. It's not perfect. It's not working. It's dysfunctional. There's no question about it. Our legal system, there are problems. There are strains of racism within our legal system. There are a lot of problems. But you know something? Let me tell you something. And I said this before in 2009. I've said this even before that. We've had many terrorists arrested. Abdul Muttalib, the underwear bomber, okay? We've had other terrorist attacks really since then and terrorist plots that have been broken up. And every time this happens, every time our federal court system does a good job in convicting these individuals and sentencing them to a federal prison. And guess what? Once they're in a federal prison, they don't escape. They do not escape. There hasn't been one escapee from a federal prison. What does that tell you? That tells you that our prosecutorial system here in the United States, our federal prosecutors and our federal corrections officers do a great job in dealing with some of the most hardened terrorists imaginable. This is nothing new. I mean, the type of crime, I mean, the bombing and the shooting and the launching of IEDs at police officers, that is never, I mean, these exact instances have never been perpetrated on this level. There's no question about that. But terrorism is nothing new in the United States. And the blueprint for dealing with these types of acts really existed. I mean, they're there right in front of us. Zacharias Moussaoui, Jose Padilla, Richard Reed, the shoe bomber. All of these individuals were ultimately, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm going off memory here, but all of these individuals were tried in civilian courts, federal courts, and convicted. And they're sitting in federal prison, and we're not hearing about them anymore. They're done. That's it. And, you know, this goes back to, I mean, you could probably go back to even the first World Trade Center bombing in 1993, where we extradited Ramzi Youssef from Pakistan and had him go in front of a judge here in the United States. This is what we do. And so there really isn't any question about, you know, what to do here, because we've always done this, even during the Bush administration, where we saw the expanded powers of the Bush administration, wiretapping and warrants and enhanced interrogation, which I'm going to talk about. President Bush still tried terrorists, domestic terrorists, as you know, civilians. And that's what these two individuals were. They were civilians. One of them was here legally, and they both were here legally. One of them was a citizen, and the other, the 19-year-old, I believe, was trying to gain citizenship. They attended universities. Their father had an auto body shop here in the United States. These weren't some illegal immigrants who crossed over from Mexico or Canada who killed people. That doesn't happen. And this is what, you know, it really bothers me, because we have those on the right, and I hate using this right-left crap because it's all you see on media. I'm so sick of this site now, Mediaite. I'm going to almost officially declare it a right-wing site, because every goddamn post is right and left, right, left. I don't want to use those terms, but sometimes, you know, I have to. But there are those out there that want to conjure up fear about illegal immigrants and have been doing this for a long time now. They want to blame, you know, problems on illegal immigrants. They want to suggest somehow that illegal immigrants are more prone to commit crime here in the United States, and that they're making the border a nightmare, and this and that. And they took this instant, and still to this moment, it's still happening. They took this act of terrorism, or these multiple acts of terrorism, and they tried to use it to pull the immigration bill further and further, make it more and more difficult for people to come in to this country. There's even some right-wing talk radio hosts suggesting that we put a freeze on Muslim exchange students here, okay? I heard a right-wing talk radio host, a former congressman, disgraced congressman, Joe Walsh on MSNBC, saying that we have a problem with young Muslims, right? We have to fight a war against young Muslims. Let me tell you how stupid this is, okay? And this is just most thinking people that think rationally about this issue understand, okay? These guys, if you listen to some of the rhetoric before, you know, Muslim individuals, dark-skinned individuals, and you know, many people, pundits and hosts suggest that the individuals that did this were illegal immigrants. These guys technically were Caucasian. They were Caucasian Americans. If you had to identify their skin color, their biological features that allows them to be distinguished from one person, you would have to say that they are Caucasian. These are white, you know, individuals. They weren't born in America, but they're white. They happened to convert to Islam. The older brother last year went to Chechnya, I believe, for 6 months. Nobody knows, although the Russian government warned the United States of some radical activity. The FBI interviewed the older brother, Tamerlan, for two times and concluded, I guess, there was no imminent danger, no threat. We don't know the circumstances of these meetings. We don't know the facts with regards to the Russian government contacting us about the older brother. But these guys converted to Islam, as is not all that common in Chechnya. Okay, you have in Chechnya, you have national Chechnyans that want to have an independent country and are suicide bombers, mainly going after Georgia and the Russian government. And then you also have Al Qaeda. You have Muslim global jihadists in Chechnya that want to kill Americans. They want to kill, you know, allies of Americans. And that second group is probably where these two fit in. But nonetheless, anybody can convert to being a Muslim. You know, if I wanted to tomorrow, if I wanted to, you know, study Islam and convert to Islam, I'm sure I could do that. I'm sure I can. And so therefore, that would make me a Muslim. Right? Technically, I guess that's what my ethnicity is, or my social origins. I'm a white Muslim. I wouldn't fit in on anybody's radar because I don't look like what these people think is a Muslim. And that's the shortcomings of profiling, is that you can't profile. You're just not. If we were going to profile, and we were going to draw an image of who we suspected would be responsible for the Boston bombing, then we wouldn't be drawing two Chechnyans. Okay, if you leave it up to the Peter Kings, if you leave it up to, you know, the right wing Tea Party people, the anti-immigrant Tea Party people, you'd have a drawing of a Muslim man with a beard. An Arab, I should say, not a Muslim man, an Arab, someone of Middle Eastern complexion, okay, according to the Unified Crime Reports, Middle Eastern is a race, it's a category of race. That's what you'd have, and guess what, that would not match these suspects. Terrorism is terrorism. Terrorism is committed by people of all races, but primarily, you know, I would make an argument, and I think I could debate anybody on this. I would make an argument that there have been more acts of terrorism coming from white anti-government extremists since 2001. I don't think there's any question about that. That's not to say that we don't have a problem with lone wolf terrorism That's not to say that we don't have a problem with, radical converts to Islam. I'm not saying that, but I want to be honest about this discussion. And what I see happening in the media is that this discussion gets demagogued by the bigots, by essentially people like Laura Ingraham and people like Peter King, who are anti-immigrant, okay, who have a very prejudiced way of thinking and do not believe, do not conceive that Timothy McVeigh, that Michael Wade Page, that Anders Breivik, that Jimmy Lee Dykes, that Joseph Stack, that Jury and Jeremy King, I mean, I could go on and on. These people are terrorists. They cannot conceive that a white Christian person could be a terrorist. And that is just pure bigotry. That is just pure white privilege, as David Sirota wrote in his Salon.com article. And I'm just seeing this the hysteria from these Islamophobic individuals out there. It's you almost have to wonder if they're even serious about fighting terrorism. Terrorism, not just, terrorism that comes from Islamic individuals. But they're not, because their bigotry gets in the way. That's why. It's much easier for them to get their audience to fear the other, fear someone, with a middle name of Hussein, fear someone who goes to a mosque, than it is for them to fear the guy at the Tea Party rally, or fear, some sovereign citizen, or whatever. It's not a terrorist because he's a white guy. Timothy McVeigh is not a terrorist. He's a white Christian guy. And you know what? I when this happened, and we were all speculating, it took us a little while to learn about, the suspects. And it wasn't until Friday that they really put out the pictures of these guys, Friday of last week. I'll be honest with you. I wanted this to be a right-wing extremist. I said to myself, you know what? These acts, right? Just before we knew anything, the basic facts, the day that it took place, some of the historical events, the events of significance, and some of the other patterns, if you talk to people, FBI and other profilers, that they say that people commit these acts for a few different reasons. For political reasons, to make a political point. For ideological reasons, to make an ideological point. Or perhaps for reasons of revenge. And I was hoping that this would be consistent with, what we saw in 1996 with Eric Rudolph, a right-wing extremist who killed a couple people, a Christian terrorist. Or, maybe someone like Joe Stack, who crashed his plane into an IRS building April 15th. This attack, of course, took place on April 15th. You see, you also had the Branch Davidian, the David Koresh, another terrorist as far as I'm concerned, right-wing Christian terrorist, kill ATF agents, just like Gordon Liddy talked about on his radio show, right? And so I'm thinking to myself, okay, you know what? Patriots Day in Boston, right? Tax Day, which has really become a very dangerous day due to the right-wing anti-government tax movement in this country, extreme tax anti-tax movement. And I'm thinking to myself, this has some characteristics of a right-wing attack. But you know what? I don't go out there and say that this was ultimately committed by two, right-wing white guys, because you don't know. It could have been committed by anybody. It could have been committed by a bunch of nuns, for all we know. Okay? But I was hoping that it was, because, as I said, the paranoid sector of our country, the paranoid, right-wing individuals, Tea Party folks, the Fox News crowd, the NRA crowd, these individuals who unfortunately are, have too much power in our society. They are the extreme minority. These individuals would be much more comfortable with one of their own committing an act of terrorism than some Muslim guy or some guy from Chechnya or whatever. And so therefore, the less paranoid they are, the less fearful they are, the better off we all are. You know? I mean, we have United States congressmen in the past have held hearings about Muslims. We have Peter King, the congressman from New York, who actually thinks that the New York Police Department have to step up their mosque surveillance, even though the FBI and the New York Police Department have done this, and it hasn't led to one single thwarting of a Muslim plot. We have a real fear and paranoia in this country, and unfortunately, something like this, you know, it's going to be twisted around. It's going to be used as a political football for the anti-immigrant, anti-Islamophobes out there, or anti-Islam individuals out there, by the defense industry. It's going to be used for political reasons and financial gain. It absolutely is. It already is. It doesn't matter the fact that these two individuals have no connection to any organized group. These are two lone individuals. It doesn't matter. This is going to be used to further the fear and paranoia of a group of people out there that really are low information individuals. Because, listen, the more frantic the Tea Party is, the more frantic these right-wing individuals are, the more they watch Fox News, the more they listen to talk radio, the more they consume. And that's what it's all about. And so, you know, I got to tell you, I think that this is really, really terrible. Now, you know, the question is now, what are we going to do? How much is the Obama administration really going to buy into this? How much are they going to, you know, really go in the direction of limiting civil liberties and limiting individuals from coming into this country? Because we've seen this time and time again from the Obama administration. When the Tea Party and the far right wing get crazy, when they get paranoid, the Obama administration acts. And they essentially validate their paranoia. A good example of this is the Abdulmutallab incident, where this individual, I think he was another young guy who tried to light his underwear. He carried explosives on a plane and tried to light his underwear on fire, and luckily it didn't go out, and he was subdued by the passengers. I believe he was from, I don't know exactly where he was from, but after that, the Obama administration restricted travel from these countries, certain countries that were thought to harbor or have a high amount of terrorists in them. You know, and that's just not who we are. That is not going to solve the problem. That's not going to stop terrorism. That is just basically adhering to the crazies in the room. That is basically, you know, validating craziness. And we're seeing that now. We really are. That's the only question is how is the Obama administration going to handle this? And, you know, we have to realize something here. Look, I've been very, very critical and I think very, very observant of right-wing terrorism out there. It is my belief that right-wing terrorism represents our greatest threat. You've had more terrorist attacks since 9/11 committed by right-wing extremists. Again, it doesn't get reported in the media because these same people that are fearful of Muslims and want to profile Muslims and want to restrict travel want to restrict student visas into this country and, you know, want to basically kill the immigration bill. These same individuals, right, they're the same people I'm telling you about, the right-wing crowd, they're so willing to, you know, profile, they accept profiling, that they you know, we have a problem with young Muslim men, right? These are the people that if we were in the 50s and 60s, they would be arguing against integration. They would be supporting the Klan. They would be supporting the efforts to smear Dr. King. These same individuals, they scowl at the idea, the idea that a terrorist can be white and Christian. They, I mean, literally, they won't even entertain the idea. They won't even have a discussion. We haven't had a discussion in this country about right-wing Christian terrorism. We can't. It doesn't even enter into this to the discussion, because these people get so sensitive, so emotional about anyone saying, well, you know, look, this could have been a right-wing extremist. This could have been, you know, someone who hated the government and hated paying taxes, right? And if you know, you look at some of the other instances, Kevin Harprim, I believe his name was, a guy who, a white supremacist, who planted a pipe bomb on the Martin Luther King Day parade route in 2011. Again, Eric Rudolph, Timothy McVeigh, these people, you know, the pundits and whatnot, they don't even want to acknowledge that we have a problem with right-wing terrorism. And I go back to the 2009 Department of Homeland Security report, where the Department of Homeland Security collected intelligence reports from law enforcement agencies and different agencies of government, and they basically surmised that the single greatest threat to our country exists from single issue individuals, right wing, you know, sovereign citizen groups, anti-abortion individuals, soldiers returning from Iraq, so on and so forth. And the Department of Homeland Security had to apologize for issuing this accurate report. The Obama administration actually, I believe, fired one of the officials that issued this report. So you see what's happening here? In the United States of America, it's easy for a congressman or a pundit to get out there and saying we have a Muslim problem. Bill O'Reilly said we have a Muslim problem. It's easy for them to say that and tarnish Muslims and try to marginalize them, but it's impossible to have a discussion about white Christian terrorism. It's impossible to even entertain the idea that we have a right-wing terrorism problem. We have a problem with these white patriot groups out there, white supremacists out there. Now, we can't even talk about that in America. You know, it makes me sick. It really does. Because, you know, it's so pathetic. It really is. But I really have to get this off my chest, because, you know, this is what happens. This is it. And this is why you got to reject corporate media. You really do. You know? Yeah, I told you, you know, Congressman Peter King wants increased surveillance of Muslims. And he actually went on to say that increased surveillance of Muslims, I'm paraphrasing here, should be the model of our nation, right? Should be the model of our nation. So in other words, you know, we should just all spy on Muslim people. Just like after World War II, you know, when we were attacked, we interned many Japanese citizens of America, right? It's this, you know, this paranoia and this fear, this bigotry, that is just tolerated. It's absolutely tolerated. Now, we don't have a problem with McVeigh's, the McVeigh types out there. We don't have a problem with, you know, in like the Hatari militia of Michigan. No, we don't have a problem with you know, the 500,000 sovereign citizen movement out there. No, we don't. It's just, you know, look, this is absolutely ridiculous. It really is. And any suggestion that these two individuals were somehow related to a group, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, so on and so forth, is unfounded. It's unfounded. And so, therefore, you have to consider them lone wolves. Lone wolves. Just like the Department of Homeland Security said in 2009. You know, we do have a problem with lone wolves individuals out there that have converted to Islam. We do have a very small minority of individuals out there that have been radicalized, you know, and have an extreme interpretation of Islam. But that exists in all religions. I mean, you know, if you don't think that there are Christians out there that are just as capable of setting off a bomb in a crowded area, then I'm sorry, you're insane. You really are. If you think that someone like, you know, Timothy McVeigh wasn't every bit as evil as these two are, or one of them, you know, one of them's dead, but, you know, if you don't apply the same standards, then you know what? There's no point of even discussing this with you. There's no point, because it's a double standard. It really is. I mean, could you imagine what would happen if a progressive congressman said that we have to have hearings about right-wing extremism in America? We have to have hearings. We should step up surveillance of Tea Party groups. Because you know something? 25% of Tea Party people believe it's okay to attack the government. That's a fact. We should step up surveillance of, you know, people that are posting on Alex Jones's website, or, you know, some of the folks over at stormfront.org, and we should really examine their relationship with the Tea Party, because they do have relationships. There are many Tea Party white supremacists out there. Not all of them are, but there are some. Could you imagine the reaction? And what do you think would happen? I mean, Jesus. Nobody even has the guts to do that, because they know the blowback from the right-wing corporate media would just be so overwhelming. They would be threatened. Their lives would be threatened. You know, just like Gabrielle Giffords, who had the courage to vote for the Affordable Health Care Act, which I'm no fan of the Affordable Health Care Act, but she had the courage to vote for a piece of legislation that was demagogued by the same crazies, the same paranoid folks, the NRA folks, that are telling us that, you know, it's we have to profile Muslims and we have to restrict student visas. It's the same crowd. It really is. And I'm just sick and tired of the double standard out there. I really am. I hoped it was a white Christian guy, because you know what? If white Christians attacked us on 9/11, if they hijacked a plane and crashed it into a building, if, you know, if we had a whole bunch of McVeigh type guys go bombing buildings in New York or Washington D.C., we wouldn't have went to war in Iraq or Afghanistan, which have been complete failures and have drained our treasury. We wouldn't have done that. If we were attacked by white guys on 9/11, white Christian guys, we wouldn't have to submit to porno scannings at airlines. We wouldn't have to surrender our shoes. This is a white person's world. And you know something? Let me tell you something. You want to talk about damaging to our country? You want to talk about killing people? Well, we have to look at what austerity has done to this country. You remember Mitt Romney? the failed presidential candidate, Mr. 47%, Mr. I don't want to release my tax records, Mr. You know, I'm paying 14% income tax rate, and that's too much, Mr. You know, just a horrible, hard human being who, I'm sorry, really should just be, he should be investigated. He should be in jail. We should have hearings about Mitt Romney and some of his business dealings. Solomir Capital is a good example of that. We should, but we don't. Because this is a white man's country still. It still is. And I think that's just very unfortunate. Really is. But you know what? This is not a surprise. It shouldn't be a surprise to anybody out there. I just want to see what's going to happen in terms of the politics here. I really want to see how the Obama administration is going to handle this. Okay? We'll be right back after this message. You're listening to Carson's Corner here on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Bob Carson. We'll be back right after this brief timeout. Get over here!
David Levitt, your host from SYM Radio. SYM Radio is helping raise awareness to missing persons, parental stranger abductions, and human trafficking through our partners. We also raise awareness that people with disabilities can do whatever they set their mind to through the love of God and Christ. And we're proud to be an affiliate with Carson's Corner, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
We're back here in Carson's Corner. We had a little static there. I hope that everybody can hear me. I have no reason to believe that we're having a connection problem, but I don't know. I don't know what the problem was there. We're talking about this whole terrorism deal. What should we do? How should we try? I'm talking about terrorism in general, the marginalization, the stereotypes being thrown out there. And I got to tell you, you know, one of the issues here is questioning the suspect, getting the most information out of him, because that's what the authorities want. They want to find out, you know, did this guy have bombs planned? You know, we're getting new reports now that apparently after these two hijacked a non-American driver, someone that, you know, they hijacked their car or carjacked their car at 7-Eleven, and they admitted to the bombings, and they went to an ATM machine. And apparently, although they were speaking a foreign language, the victim in this case said that he heard the word Manhattan. And right by the 7-Eleven, there was a highway that, you know, if you follow it, it would lead eventually to Manhattan. So there was, I think, you know, at least there's evidence at this point that they wanted to take their reign of terror beyond where they were at. And maybe they wanted to go to Manhattan or some other city. And so, therefore, how do you question them? Right? I mean, you know, how do you get the information that you need through the civilian process? Well, it turns out there's a public safety exemption. And this is mainly used for, you know, individuals who maybe have been captured and there's an article of evidence missing, there's a gun, there's something that threatens the public, and this gives the police officers the right to waive the Miranda rights and question this individual. Now, this is really irrelevant in this case because, first of all, the FBI is going to have their high-level negotiators, the best negotiators they can have, interrogating this individual, okay? Not that they can really interrogate him because he can't talk, but there has been some communication between them and the suspect ever since he was taken into custody, okay? And the evidence that is going to be used against this kid seems so overwhelming that the conviction is not going to be dependent upon any type of confession. So, you know, really, I don't think it's all that relevant to the case. I really don't. I mean, I believe the authorities have 72 hours to formally charge a suspect, and the FBI is trying to get information. Now, the only thing is that, and we should really have a legal expert on to discuss this, the only thing that I would wonder is that if they question him within the 72-hour period without having read him his Miranda rights, okay, and they get information about a terrorist, some sort of terrorist cell or whatnot, or some sort of impending attack that's going to be carried out, and they wind up stopping that and bringing the individuals to justice, would that be inadmissible because they didn't question, didn't Mirandize the suspect, and therefore any information that they got from the suspect as it pertains to, you know, future cases or you know, pending threats is going to be irrelevant, and therefore the authorities would not have any type of legal action that they could take against people that are trying to commit acts of terrorism. That's a valid question. That is. But we have to really recognize that this guy Sarnoff has been questioned, okay, and the FBI, CIA, they have questioned him without his lawyer present. And, you know, they are invoking the public safety exception, all right? And so it hasn't been a hindrance for the investigation that we know of, but we'll just have to see. We really will. You know, this has happened before where if this guy was smart, you know, the 19-year-old, you know, what does he want to do? Does he want to try to use a trial to make a mockery and highlight his anti-American views, or does he want to try to give up information and try to make sure he doesn't get the death penalty? I don't know. I guess we'll have to find out in the coming months or so. Okay, we'll see what happens there. But you know, we got to fight back against this. We really do. We got to fight back against the bigotry that's out there, because I would submit to you that it's all the same. You know, we talk about economic issues, okay? We talk about how bigotry just pervades a lot of the discussion in America. You know, for example, welfare, right? We hear all about how we're a welfare nation and we're a taker nation and we have takers and makers, and that has racism, bigotry within it. You know, there's a difference between bigotry and racism, but that has bigotry in it, because the same individuals that are telling us that, you know, we have an enemy in this country and we're at war with young Muslims, we're at war with Islam, the same individuals that are telling us that are basically, you know, broad brushing many billions of people out there, the same individuals are the ones that associate welfare with minorities, right? I mean, Joe Walsh, the guy on MSNBC this afternoon, this is a guy who's made many racist remarks. This is a guy who believes that it's only welfare when it goes to a minority person, right? Just like it's only terrorism when it is committed by a Muslim. You see this? This is just the inherent bigotry within our culture. And it's just, it's, if you let this go on, if you don't say anything and you just, you know, if you're talking with someone at work or whatever, you let this go on, then you know what? It's just that person, that bigot, goes on to infect another person. And it just goes down the line. You know, no, welfare, you want to talk about welfare? Look at corporate America. Look at Intel. Look at Cisco. Look at Walmart. Look at ExxonMobil. Look at Bank of America. Look at all the investment banks. All of corporate healthcare companies. Just fill it up, like they're welfare queens. They absolutely are. I mean, the government subsidies, loan guarantees, free land deals. All of these perks that are not available to you and I. Look at our tax code. Who manipulates the tax code? You know, it's just, it all ties into the same battle. It really does. Again, those that are espousing these viewpoints, you know, someone like Laura Ingraham, as I mentioned earlier, okay. Who do you think that a person like that is being funded by? Who's paying her bills? Who's flying her across the country? Right? Who's basically signing her paychecks? Well, you'll find out that if you do the research, it's groups like Americans for Prosperity, it's groups like the Chamber of Commerce, the Koch brothers, and I would submit to you that these forces, these economic forces of darkness, are a greater threat to our country than anybody out there. You know, David Koch and his group, his fellow libertarians, sociopathic libertarians, the Randians, the Friedmanites, or whatever you want to call it, the individuals that believe that liberty only exists for corporations, that, you know, corporations have to be free to treat the workers as disposable. They have to be free to control the media message. They have to be free to offshore your job. They have to be free of any type of government regulation. They've caused more death and more destruction than any of these guys could even hope to imagine. But yet they're rewarded. You know, they're praised. They're seen as legitimate by some of these folks. It's really remarkable. It really is. But you know what? That's why we're here. That's why I'm here. Okay. And I got to tell you, there's some news concerning this broadcast. Very, very happy about this. There's going to be sometime in the next couple months a network, a network of grassroots, independent progressives out there, not marching in lockstep, you know, just a place on the internet that you could find talk like this, and you could find, you know, progressive talk that not necessarily is designed to uphold the current economic system, okay, as MSNBC and you know, many of the folks on Current are. It is true, you know, radical talk by some measures that is supposed to reach people out there that get it, that understand what's going on and want to be a part of the solution. And this show, Carson's Corner, is supposedly going to be part of that network. I'm very proud of that because this is something that needs to be done, and I know a lot of people have talked about this. You know, organizations like Truth Out and others for years have been planning this, and nobody's really gotten around to it because there are some challenges to it. I mean, you know, it's a financing issue. Okay, I'm doing the show. I'm not getting paid to do the show, but many people out there, you know, unfortunately, the people that have money in our society, they don't want to put their efforts behind something that isn't going to make them more money. And so they're not going to change the marketplace. That's why there's just a huge infrastructure of right-wing talk show hosts out there, just a huge infrastructure right-wing media complex out there. In fact, David Koch and his brother are looking to purchase 8 newspapers. 8 newspapers across America, the Koch brothers, right? Now, I say let them. I say let these bastards purchase all newspapers. Let them take even more control over our media. It's only going to strengthen guys like us. It's only going to strengthen networks like the network I'm talking about. You know, we already have a corporate-driven media that exists to uphold the current economic system, which benefits them. If you want to go further and further and further in a fascist direction, well, that's only going to lead people to shows like this. That's only going to solidify our mistrust of the media. And so, you know, I hear about that, and it's funny because still to this day, you have these bumpkins. I was in Barnes & Noble today. I bought a book, actually. I'm starting to, you know, I check out library books, and I'm starting to, you know, buy some books here, add to my book collection. I see this book by, I don't know who this guy is, David Fredoso, some right-wing guy, saying how the media got Barack Obama elected. And I laugh about how off-base and how misguided someone like that is. I mean, obviously, he's trying to reach a target audience of these you know, right-wing media zombies out there who believe in a liberal media and are told that, and are told that there are death panels, and are told that we're at war with Islamic Muslim, young Muslims, and we need to have hearings and stepped-up surveillance of mosques and whatnot. They'll believe anything that their corporate media person tells them to, but the media is only as liberal as the corporations that own it, and the media exists to uphold the current economic system, which is why someone like Maggie Thatcher, a horrific person who's done horrific things, is heralded as a beacon of freedom, and yet someone like Hugo Chavez or Fidel Castro is portrayed as some sort of a monster, which is absolutely ridiculous. All right, I'm out of here. Facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA, Twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA, and don't forget to follow me on Blog Talk Radio, please, okay? It's very, very important. I'm out. We'll be back at you sometime in a few days with an MMA show. And until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.